George Carlin once memorably described his profession as the result of a man who once barked at some royal court, "The dancers are late. Throw the fool out there." George Carlin has been out there since the early 1950s. Now, there was a time when he wore tuxedos with clip-on bow ties and told mother-in-law jokes. And today he charms the children of baby boomers as the train conductor on Sesame Street. But for many, the image of George Carlin will always rest somewhere in the 1970s, bearded, blue-jeaned, an outlaw, and out there. The albums which Mr. Carlin recorded then, albums which won him Grammys and made him the object of a noted and quoted Supreme Court case, have been collected and reissued in a box set of CDs. They're called George Carlin, The Little David Years, 1971 to 1977. And George Carlin joins us.
How do you do?
Great pleasure to be in the studio with you.
I will lay claim to the tuxedo portion. Perhaps the tie was a clip-on, but there was never a mother-in-law joke that passed my lips.
I stand corrected.
Well, not corrected so much as just set aright.
To listen to these CDs is to understand what changed in you, the process that you went through?
Well, that would exclude any further growth. There has been considerable further growth since 1977.
Yes.
But to hear these is to hear what I think of as phase two of a career as a comedian, which began in 1960. I had come really from a kind of an outlaw experience or background. I got kicked out of everything. I didn't quit intentionally, including schools and the choir and the
high
boys.
School. We were in the Air Force.
I left the Air Force early as well. Mutual agreement. They said, look, this isn't working out. Why don't you take the clothes? We'll give you a little money and you can be on your way.
I didn't know they did that in the Air Force.
Well, they did it when they were cutting manpower in 1957. Yeah. But the point I'm making, and probably the long way around, is that I had pretty much never felt in step. But I had a dream at the same time as from childhood to be like Danny Kaye, which is demonstrably a middle class and mainstream dream. So here I was thinking and feeling one way and acting another way in the 1960s, being on television, on variety shows, working in straight nightclubs and entertaining people considerably older than I who held very conservative views. So I was out of place, and that's when the change took place in the late 60s, leading to this period the albums represent, which was, of course, the 70s.
On, for example, AM and FM or Class Clown, what are the routines as you review them now that say something about you?
Well, FM and AM was intended, the title of it was intended to show that I was moving from what seemed to be an AM personality at that time, which was sort of commercial, to an FM personality, which at that time, FM, as you know, was rather underground, they called it, underground
right.
radio and subversive. So I felt I was going through a change similar to that, and that was a good metaphor for me. So I called it FM and AM. And on one side of it, I did all the routines in their best, newest, most finished form that had sustained me in the years just prior to that. Mm-hmm. And then on side B, the FM side, I tried to show the direction I thought I was going in, which had a little more risk in it. And that was the one Shoot, S-H-O-O-T, which was my version of another expletive that sounds similar. Then in Class Clown, I decided to tell who I was, to explain myself. And the Class Clown is largely autobiographical. It's about being a class clown, being a funny young kid, and how I manifested that and what it did for me and to me.
You say in many ways that's the toughest thing to be is a class clown because your audience isn't supposed to laugh.
Yeah, but in a way it's easiest because it's harder to suppress a laugh, it would seem to me, than to react naturally. Uh-huh. When the nuns are looking or the priest or whoever it is, you're trying to keep it in, it bursts forth even with greater force. So I had a captive audience of people potentially, you know, who would explode for me. And as I often have said, too, I decided at that time that as long as I wasn't going to receive an education, why should these other children be allowed to? The other autobiographical aspect in that album is the religion, not so much religion as the experience of being a Catholic boy in a Catholic school.
I was from one of those Irish neighborhoods in New York, one of those kind of parish schools. It wasn't typical. It was Corpus Christi was the name of it. Could have been any Catholic church, right? Our Lady of Great Agony. St. Rita Moreno, Our Lady of Perpetual Motion. What's the difference? What's your call? You know. The church part and the neighborhood part were typical, but the school was not. It wasn't one of those old-fashioned parish kind of prison schools with a lot of corporal punishment and systematic discipline with the steel ruler, right? You'd fall 2 years behind in penmanship, right?
Well, he's behind in penmanship, Mrs. Carlin. I don't know why.
Well, he's crippled. He's trying to learn to write with his left hand. You know?
I guess I had forgotten until I listened to these CDs again and read the liner notes. Mm-hmm. How angry you used to make people.
I like to find out where the line might be drawn and then deliberately cross it. There are an awful lot of taboos, personal, societal. Some of them come from religion. Some of them come from custom and convention. Some of them are just personal. And I just enjoy squashing them and stepping on them and peeling them apart and trying to expose them to people. For some reason, it makes me happy. There's no altruism in it. You know, I don't think they're going to be better for it, or I am. But it seems as though it gives me pleasure to show them that the haunted house is really probably fairly safe in there. I was very heavily influenced by Lenny Bruce's honesty on stage during the 50s, during his period, as were many people at the time, and found that those doors he opened felt good. That breeze rushing through felt really good. So I always felt that was good, and I could do that too. I could add a little something to that chapter.
I'd like you to do something with this, if it's all right with you. Mm-hmm. This box set contains a bonus disc.
Yes, you gotta have a bonus. Free extra, added complimentary bonus. Get that, no cost to the consumer.
Exactly, no added cost to
no
the consumer.
No added cost, right.
It's not free, you're not giving it away.
I like extra bonus gift.
All right, you have a routine which, all right, when I heard it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is the genesis of Jerry Seinfeld.
You got a piece of cake that you assume to be nut-free, and you're chewing your ass off. A nice piece of chocolate cake. You got most of it on the left cheek, because that's where you chew good, and you don't get the electric signals from the chocolate to your brain on the bad teeth you have on the other side. Chewing that chocolate real good, nice and soft, good soft, nice consistency. Now the frosting is starting to blend with the cake part, and it's all one good big gooey mess in your mouth, but it's smooth as hell. It breaks up and it comes back together, and you're chewing like crazy, and here comes a nut. Here comes a nut that you have to deal with. Either you have to chew it at the moment or put it in the ashtray. I usually put it in the ashtray along with my toenail clippings.
Should we stay with this?
No. That comes from personal preferences and likes and dislikes. Never could understand the presence of nuts in ice cream. Nuts belong in a little bowl on the counter next to the pretzels, in between the pretzels perhaps and the potato chips. That's where they belong. That's where they ought to be, not in other items. And that was, and of course, then the performer takes over. I mean, that's just the idea.
Yeah.
And then comes the performer who does this nice little riff on how it is to chew this thing. You know, there was something I read in Arthur Koestler's Act of Creation once. He was talking about the jester. He said there's a triptych that can be traversed by the jester. He said the jester is the jester, and he makes the joke, and that's it. But if there are some ideas underpinning the joke, then he drifts over a little bit into the center panel, which might be that he is a touch of a thinker. There's a bit of a sage. So he's jester and sage. And then if these jokes with some ideas undergirding them are done in kind of marvelous language, something pleasant to the ear, there's a bit of a poet at work, too. Mm-hmm. By the way, at the end of this bonus disc, there are, and I don't know if you
maybe
got...
Maybe I didn't explain. This is previously unreleased material.
That's right. There is a 20th cut that isn't listed. The 19th cut is the last one listed. And down to number 20, which this happened because of a mistake in indexing when we made this box set. These are tapes I made when I was 12 years old. In little booths at Coney
Island. I'm embarrassed
Island.
To say I didn't listen to that because I thought it was over at 19.
And you would be right. And I don't know how I'm going to explain this to the consumer administration or whatever
they are. Take a second now.
What happened is before tape recorders were common, you would go to a booth in an amusement park or something and put a quarter in, and for a minute you could record your voice. It used to say, record your voice, send a letter to your loved one in the service or something. And I used to go in there and do my little routines, my childhood routines, imitating newsmen, imitating sports announcers, imitating commercials on radio and TV. So when I was 12 years old, I made about 8 of these, and we've included them in the box set. The first one is a good representation of what I'm talking. You can hear my original New York accent.
Fourth roundup from the World Telegram and Sun scoreboard. First of all, in baseball, the Yankees beat the Athletics 2-0. St. Louis Browns beat Washington 3-0. The only game in the National League was the Dodgers and the Cardinals. The Dodgers won that game 35-0. In the golf scores, Ben Hogan won the National Open Women's Golf Championship with a 18-hole score of 71. That's a new record for the Open Golf Championship. And now, folks, we are going to bring our special broadcast from Russia. Means hello, folks. Goodbye, folks.
Many times you've seen me before in the movies. This is WMGM FM New York.
This is Gene Kelly. It was a pleasure to star with Lana Turner and George Murphy in the new picture, Flying Sailors. This is WMGM and WMGM FM in New York. Stay tuned for Brooklyn Dodger baseball. It's a home run. Folks, Roy Campanella wins the ball game for the Dodgers. That was the quickest game on record.
Oh, George.
Yeah, they're precious to me.
What does that make you feel like to sit here?
Well, it cements in for me the certitude that I feel about this career I chose. As the twig is bent, as they say, there was an inevitability about this. I was imitating Mae West before I knew who she was and had never heard her because my mother said, "Here's how you do Mae West." And I would say, "Come up and see me sometime." And I was 4. You know, it was absurd in a sun suit with my hand on my hip. But I was a mimic.
You mentioned dangerous these days. Yes.
That's right. I was a mimic first. And then one day, somewhere along the way, I don't even remember what the line was. I don't remember my age, but I remember saying something to my mother that was a genuine joke. And I got her genuine laugh. I knew her social laugh, and I knew the difference between that and her genuine laugh. And I said something as a child, and she laughed genuinely and looked at me. And I sort of knew, I won't say I knew from that moment on, but I knew in that instant that something I loved had just happened.
George, thank you. It's been very nice to talk to you.
Thank you for an intelligent interview, which, you know, it was 1 out of 4 seemed that way, and I'm always very happy and very, very proud of it.
I'm glad we could be part of Betting 250.
Thank you. Thank you. That's right. The Mendoza line, whatever it is.
Oh, yes, that's right. George Carlin, his most recent production is George Carlin, The Little David Years, 1971 to 1977. And this is NPR's Weekend Edition. I'm Scott Simon.